Welcome, everyone, to the All Out Coach podcast live across social media. My name is Tim Mikhailashvili. I'm your host, CEO and co-founder of Amedev Pharma, an analytics company for life sciences that uses a sports and science formula to inspire and measure performance in medical affairs organizations. Today, I am honored to have my guest, Rebecca Fries, join us all live. She's a workplace champion. With over 20 years of experience in change management leadership, she identifies outdated practices in organizations that vary from small startups to large Fortune 500 organizations. She helps manage talent as well to maximize potential and create momentum. She's had various leadership roles, including vice president of people, and written a book called The Good Culture: The Leader's Guide to Creating a Workplace That Doesn't Suck. And she's currently on a mission to help organizations not just be better places at work, but also be exceptionally innovative, engaging, and forward-thinking places as well. We share this mission, so I can't wait to talk about adding more life to work with culture and innovation in our episode today. Becky, so nice to have you here on All Out Coach.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for reaching out. I'm so glad to be part of your mission and everything that you're trying to do.
Absolutely. Likewise. And you and I met in 2019, a few months before the pandemic, at what I would call probably the best leadership forum that I had ever attended personally, the World Business Forum in New York City.
Yep.
And in fact, it was my first time at the LinkedIn headquarters as well.
Yeah, I mean, which is such a fantastic headquarters in New York City, right? being up at the Empire State Building and experiencing that. Yeah, so we were lucky to be able to run those events with Wilby back then, where we would take a subset of the attendees on a journey into those organizations. So I'm glad that you got to be part of that right before it all shut down.
Yes, in fact, I was part of that group that you moderated, that you facilitated with so many great leaders there. So I want to talk a little bit about you as a person first, as an individual, before we get into some of your work, yes, and some of your case studies, transforming various companies. Looking back, what are some of the biggest highlights in your career, or surprises as well? Is there a moment that has stayed with you? Or that surprised you, or that as a result of which you made a big leap, for example?
I think one of the markers of my career is that I made a lot of leaps, and I've reflected a lot because it's been a pretty long. I hope to have a much longer career, but it's been pretty long already. We're in the three decades now of my career, and when I look back, I think about kind of what made me have the success that I've had. And hopefully will continue to have. And it's because I've been willing to kind of do these informed leaps and informed things. So there's these different parts in my career where I kind of leaned into something, right? Where I would be like, okay, I have no idea if this is gonna work out, but it feels right. One was leaving Anderson Consulting, Accenture, and going to a startup. In 1999. So going from I left Anderson without even having a job lined up because I just knew that I needed to do my next thing. Right. And I needed to separate. But, biggest surprise, probably was, and it's an interesting way to put it, a surprise, but, I came back, I'd left, the innovation consultancy I was working for because I wanted to move back to the West Coast. They didn't have an office out here. So I was like, that's okay. I'll figure it out. Again, taking another leap. But the surprise was I interviewed to go back into a big consulting, job, one of the big five or four or whatever it is now. And I, got the offer, loved the people, loved the work, and I had a conversation with a mentor of mine. His name's Maynard Webb, and he COO of eBay, CEO of LiveOps. He used to be my client back in Accenture days. And I was talking to him about this potential opportunity, and he was like, why would you do that? Why would you do that? He's like, so many people come here and talk to me and get advice about, you know, they don't know what they want to do. They don't know how they want to do it. He's like, you know what you want to do. You know how to do it. You have a career like doing things. Like, why don't you just go do it?
That's the first step.
Instead of working for somebody else. And I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, and it was kind of one of these reframe moments that I needed somebody else to reflect for me. And so that's when I started Flynn Consulting, and that was 9 years ago, and mm-hmm. have not looked back. It was a really beautiful kind of surprise moment and leap in my career.
Yeah. Takes courage and giving yourself permission. That's what I take away from that that story.
You should fail too. Like, right? I don't know what's going to happen next, you know. and every day is a little bit like that for me, and when you have your own business, as you know.
Sure. It's a roller coaster. Of course. So there are various different definitions of culture across different languages. I was born in the Republic of Georgia. I spent most of my life now in the United States, but culture can sometimes be also associated with intellect or knowledge, or having a good breadth of knowledge, or
having culture and having culture. Yeah.
So there's many different definitions of culture. Is there a brief one that you can share with us?
I mean, my operating definition of culture is with regards to the workplace, right? So I definitely focus it on, mm-hmm. you know, when we're talking about workplace culture, really simply, we talk about culture as like how the work gets done. It's all the behaviors, the actions, the norms, the, you know, it's one thing to talk about the why or you know, the things that you're working on, et cetera, but how the work gets done, how people interact with each other, the way that you go about the work is your culture.
Yeah. I also, liked one very simple definition of the worst behavior that you're willing to tolerate as well.
Oh, wow. That is true. I mean, ultimately.
You mentioned behaviors there, right? So
ultimately, and I know you and I have talked about accountability too. It's mm-hmm. like whatever you allow to happen, well, there it is. Like that means that's our culture. That's allowed here. That's the way. I had a woman on our journey last week, our event, who is at Accenture, actually, mm-hmm. and she's an HR business partner. And she said they have a kind of a motto, if you will, that conduct counts. And so mm-hmm. for me, that's like, you know, where the rubber meets the road. It's when, you know, when the way somebody is operating, that is the definition of your culture, and it counts. So the lowest, to your point, like the lowest common denominator that you're willing to tolerate, well, that there it is right there. There's your proof point of what we tolerate in our culture. So therefore, that is our culture.
Right. Yeah. So when you start an organization nowadays, every agency, in addition to branding your products, your organization usually brands your mission and value statement, of course, right? Yet at the same time, every single person brings their own character, right? So which you have to manage somehow in order to unlock their potential. And I know you've done a lot of work in talent management as well. But what has been your signature approach to helping organizations with their culture?
Right. So I think if there's one big if there's one word that I could use that's like the critical path to success, it's alignment. And that doesn't mean necessarily matching. It doesn't mean we all have to be the exact same, but we do have to align around the how we're going to operate, right? So you're so right. It's commonplace now that people have their five values and it's up on their wall and blah, 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 blah. Right. Where, by the way, 10 years ago, that was like, what? We don't even know what values, you know, that's funny. It's made me very happy that people are recognizing that there's a reason that you need to do this and there's something that you need to rally around. But that alignment, so I'm not just saying like everybody needs to know the five values and they need to be on a thing that we can all, you know, repeat. Like the alignment has to be, what do we mean when we say those words? So you and I have talked about how there's kind of the kind of characteristic of a value that's a descriptor, but then there's the behavioral element to it, which is like, what does that look like in practice when people are actually acting in that value and acting in accordance with that value? Because you can take it a bunch of different ways. So we talk about culture code as a way of aligning. So what is a culture code? It is taking those values, taking kind of what your, like, what are we here to do? Your purpose, your mission, your vision, and your values. And you take it down to the level of like, so what does that mean? What are the guardrails around how we are going to enact that work? And so you could go to one organization and they could say, you know, a value is transparency, and they could define transparency in one way. It means we will do this. It means we will not do this. It means, you know, that we will, again, it gets back to the accountability, like that lowest, like we will not tolerate XYZ. You go to another organization, they have the same value, transparency, but it could mean something incredibly different for them. And so it's getting to that alignment around that definition of that culture code, which is the key to kind of getting those individuals and the organization on the same page, not acting all as robots, but understanding the guardrails within how we're operating.
Yes, you can, you know, come in with a character that people others define as, let's say, trustworthy or honest. Right. But yet, if you're in an environment that may have that as a value, corporate value, however, the immediate people around you don't express those kinds of behaviors, chances are you may behave out of character, right? Which and that's why I think what aligning is so important.
I think about, Wells Fargo is a partner of ours and has been, you know, a client of ours, and they've had some trouble with alignment over the past, you know, decade or so. And it came down to, and we talk about this too, like, how do you measure this? How do you make sure you're holding people accountable? It came down to, you know, what they were professing, but then their actions, specifically how they were rewarding and compensating people, were misaligning. And it was creating people to behave in a way that was against their own values and against Wells Fargo's values, and got them in a lot of trouble, basically. Right. And that's where, you know, that's a kind of an extreme case of what can go wrong when you don't have alignment with those values. Mm-hmm. You know, a minor case is just you're mismatched on team expectations. You don't get the work done in the way that you wanted to get done. Your customer isn't as satisfied. You know, there's all these little things that happen that erode the ability to have the impact and the performance that you want to have if you don't have that alignment.
Since you mentioned performance, and that's an area that's very near and dear to my heart, as you know, most organizations separate metrics from culture, yet our performance expectations or metrics have an integral role on how we behave and how we communicate. If you and I work together and I don't respond to your email on time, you may not meet those metrics, those expectations on which both of our work depends together, right? Or and your ultimate performance review, for example. So can you elaborate a little bit on maybe what your experiences have been at various Fortune 500 companies or other startups of designing the metrics that include incentives as well that stimulate that best culture?
Yeah, this is a big one, and it's a great one. And so we do the definition. Suddenly we have, you know, at least an understanding around, you know, here's what we mean when we say these things and how we want to act, because we believe, what's the point of culture? We believe that having this defined, aligned culture will support our strategy. It will support our performance, right? That is why we do this, right? So, but if you do that, but then don't have on the back end, like the way to operationalize it, like how are we integrating it into our programs, policies, procedures, you know, performance metrics, like then there's a big gap there, because it's like, okay, well, we say this, but then my everyday work does this, and you have a disconnect there, right? So one of those things is, and I would hazard a guess, metrics and performance discussions and all that is one of the most important ones. If we're not looking at how we measure how we're doing on any of these things, then It's really hard to close that gap, right? It's really hard to move it forward. So, so that's just kind of philosophically. So the how, because I don't, frankly, I don't have a really strong opinion on different types of, you know, your way, your process to measure performance has to be fit for purpose, just like anything else in your culture. Like if you're a really metrics driven company that, you know, actually has to report out, you know, maybe you're in, maybe it's finance, maybe it's, you know, pharma, maybe it's whatever, where it's highly regulated and you need to be, you know, that you're going to have a different performance process than like a 40 person startup that is actually just really needing to have conversations. So I don't necessarily have a, like, this is the right way to do performance process. However, you have to do it.
Sure.
And secondly, I think what it should be driving always is conversations, you know, like that. So performance and development, a lot of times I will separate them with my clients because I'm like, it gets all caught up in like the mechanics of a performance process instead of like focusing on, well, are we having conversations with your people, right? And are we talking about their careers and are we talking about their development, et cetera? So sometimes I will decouple those things with our clients. Okay, back to actual metrics. The good news is lots of companies are saying this is important and we need to have both. We can't just be saying what are the you know, the output metrics that are happening that we're judging performance on. We also need to be looking at things like how well are they aligning with our values in their actions and the way they behave, because they're seeing that disconnect if you don't do that. I had one, and this gets back to accountability. I had literally just last week, a tech company here in the Bay Area was talking about how they had to make a really hard decision about a leader who just wasn't performing. Or I shouldn't say that, like his team was performing, but they were getting a lot of feedback around his behavior, frankly, like his ability to kind of align with the culture. Yeah. And it was a really hard decision, but they knew that it was not only demotivating the team around him, but it was like you said, I love that, like lowest common denominator. It was a proof point for the whole organization that that behavior was tolerated.
Right.
And, you know, once you let one person do that, especially if they're a leader, you know, how can you stand and say like, no, this is what we expect of our people. Right. So, so they had to let this person go. And it was a really hard decision, but they stood by it because in the midst of layoffs, in the midst of having to take cuts and everything else, they're like, what? And we're going to let this person just keep operating in this way that isn't working for us. So, I do think that, like the companies that are leading on this are going to put these things together in a very, very thoughtful way. And they're creating metrics that are not just like, is it a culture fit? Like, do they align with our values? Right. It's going back to that culture code and saying, okay, so what are the proof points in somebody's behavior that say that they're aligning or not aligning, and having real conversations about that, right? So again, if it's transparency, what do we mean by transparency? What kinds of things are we expecting and what will we not tolerate? And then getting that woven into those performance conversations.
In my experiences, Becky, I've observed some of the most transformational companies to actually feature metrics and use it very with intention.
Yeah,
intentionally. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think if you can find a way to incentivize your individuals to perform better and to use the kinds of expectations that are relevant to them.
Yeah.
And then report them transparently.
Yeah.
Then you can have competitors, employees that can be more inspired, I think, right? And to receive recognitions as well, right? In a timely manner, the recognition aspect of it.
100%. So you're just making me think. So one of the things that we're seeing pop up a lot more now, which I love, is manager engagement, like surveys. So like an MEI metric where, you know, we have engagement surveys, right? Great. That's become more commonplace. And we're using that to measure our culture and see how we're doing and whatnot and see where we might improve. Great. There's a subset now that's happening around the manager specifically. So, you know, as long as you have enough team, you know, people on your team that you can have, you know, slightly anonymous, they're getting this real feedback around managers, right? So, you know, 360s have been around for a while, but this is a little different. It's like, you know, across the organization where you can actually look at how teams feel about their managers and you can compare them, right? Based on the same set of questions. And, you know, and then you can use that in a really proactive way to say like, okay, Tim, you know, like you're just, you know, looking across your peers here, like you're coming in at like 75% where all your peers are at, you know, 86%, like my manager engages me, my manager knows what I'm about, blah, 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 blah. Like, how can we work on this and help you get there, right? I love that because it's more proactive. And so it gets back to what you're saying about like the you know, metrics can really provide the clarity for people. It is incentives, it's clarity. It's like, oh, thank you. I know what you're expecting of me, right? And I also love that because while it's metrics, it's not necessarily like linked 100% to performance and compensation, right? So I'm measuring this in order to help you develop, in order to help you be your best self, in order to help you understand and be clear about what's expected of you. And by the way, if that's not cool with you, what I'm putting out there is what we expect, then we know it's better than guessing, right? It's better than like,
I think.
Yeah. It's better than hoping that we're all on the same page here. It's like, no, here's the page. Here's what we expect. And then if it doesn't work for you, you know, you might need to find a different organization. And I don't think that's harsh. I think that's being as clear as possible so that everybody can be happy, you know?
Yeah. There's something probably to be said about a sense of belonging also, when you 100%. Know what part of your work contributes to what corresponding part of the success of the entire organization form of a metric, right? That you would want to know in a transparent
way. I would want to know. Doing a good job here. It's funny when you were asking me that, like biggest surprises in my career, I almost told this story and it's appropriate now. I was at a company. I thought I was doing a bang up job. I really thought I was crushing it. But I wasn't getting any feedback and I was kind of floating out at a project. I had a mentor who was my project lead, but he really wasn't giving me any guidance. And so I finally, after I'd been working on this project for like 6 months, I'd been at the company for like a year. I came up to my mentor and I was like, hey, I don't know if I'm having the impact that's needed here. I'm like, I'm working, I feel good about what I'm doing, I have a good relationship with the client, but I don't know. And he was like, huh, yeah, I don't either. And I was so surprised. My whole career, I've had people be like, you're crushing it, Becky. Like, you're doing great. Like, just keep doing what you're doing. And he was like, no, you're right. I actually don't know if you're having the impact that we need. And it really knocked me off my feet because I was like, first of all, I'd never really gotten that kind of negative feedback. I'd gotten, you know, development areas and whatnot, but that was like, you're not having impact feedback. And it blew me away. Like, and so I come back to, because we didn't clarify what was expected of me and what we were trying to do there. So therefore I couldn't, you know, do those things, right? And so then we came back around and we're like, what's the impact Becky's had? It was like, I don't know. Like neither of us could articulate it. And it made me look really bad. Like it was, I had to have like a performance conversation about my impact at this company.
But I commend you for being proactive about it and courageous about
it. I'm like, you have to ask.
You know, and you're probably not alone. I think all employees want to know their personal impact. And it's just, it's a matter of kind of embracing the data that we have now also technology that we have, in which we're exposed, data is exposed more than ever before.
Exactly.
So maybe you can, you know, maybe reframe metrics from just being something that's competition, and but it can actually increase the quality and of effort and collaboration as well, potentially.
Information,
right?
Is good. It's really good.
And feedback, to your point, also, right?
It's really good. Yeah. And I do think the younger generations, they get it in that sense. They're always asking. Mm-hmm. I mean, at net large, like this is a characteristic of millennials, a characteristic of Gen Z, that they're like, hey, how am I doing? Hey, how am I doing? And like Gen X and boomers are like, just do your work. Like, stop asking how you're doing. But there is a happy medium, because we have to be clear on those expectations. Yep. We have to be giving feedback, or else how can we know if we're not doing well? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was like, I have a gut feeling that I'm not doing a good job here. So I'm just going to ask. And I still think I was doing a good job, but obviously I wasn't meeting the expectations that were in the heads of my manager.
Right. Yeah, it was a communication issue, and you, but the important step was to have that, to have that conversation, right? Yeah. So, well, let's reset here, and you know, I want to pick up on just the fact that metrics are a moving target throughout the different milestones of successes of a launch or failures. Culture can change also, right? So what, you know, how does culture change? Is it really static? Is it dynamic? Mm-hmm. What is, you know, what do we need to know in order to maintain, you know, the culture, or that maintenance cycle of culture, if you will, as managers, as leaders?
So your culture should always be aligned with your strategy, right? So, mm-hmm. so you have a culture. Like a Disney culture is going to be very different than the culture of an SEC, right? And that's on purpose. Mm-hmm. They are two very different organizations that have very different strategies and very different ways of operating in order to meet their goals. And that's on purpose, right? One is more, you know, a learning, take risks, engaging organization. The other one is more of a structured, you know, we need to actually have very specific guidelines and ethics and, you know, whatnot. And it's not to say that like, one or the other is better. They're different because they have to be in order to support their strategy. So when you think about that, so you've got a company and it's got a specific purpose, and the culture should be, you know, aligned around that purpose. Then it shouldn't change so much as evolve. Right. When it goes through these things. Right. So product launch success or failure. Right. Yes, it might impact. It might be like, ooh, like that was a success because we really leaned into our ability to be innovative and take risks. Right. Like
Do individuals tend to diverge in their behaviors during those instances of when, you know, product fails in a strong culture? Do they come together more, or does it tend to diverge and people just start to act out of character? And
for example, well, what we've seen is in times of stress, you see where your gaps are, right? So people default to their worst behaviors in times of stress. When everything's great, of course we can like be, you know, but when in times of stress, that's when it's like you cut to like, you literally become your worst version of yourself, right? So unless you're, you know, really good at resilience and self-awareness, blah, 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 blah. Like these are the things we work on all the time. Right. So that's where we see the cracks. So I wouldn't say that like people diverge from their behaviors. It's almost like if you have a scale of like in health and in stress, you know, it's a lot harder in stress to, you know, be on top. I mean, nobody's perfect, right? No organization is perfect. No. So you start to see all the cracks and the fissures. And if it's leadership that is diverging because they're in stress, then that's where stuff starts to fall apart, right? So we definitely see that. Like when the pandemic hit, we saw versions of organizations that had a strong culture where there wasn't a lot of gaps, you know, that really like they shone. Like it was beautiful. It was like, no, we rally, we got them together. Like, we've got you. Like, we're not going to let anybody go. Like, we're going to support you. Like you could just, the leadership was transparent. They were so supportive of their people. They put things in place to make sure that everybody was taken care of, et cetera, right? Like that strong culture, like helped enable them. Right.
Yeah.
So in stress, they were still pretty healthy because there weren't any gaps. Or I should say there are fewer gaps in stress with other cultures where there was probably a lot more gaps, but when you're healthy and good, like can't really see them, right? Like it's not, yeah. And then it comes stress and then it's like, suddenly it's like, ooh, there it is. Like we see, you know, who, like where we have some things, mm-hmm. we mm-hmm. saw really bad behaviors. You know, we saw people treated really poorly and teams fall apart in that. In those scenarios. And so
in the past few years, right?
Pandemic. And it was like, and so for me, the pandemic just was like this bright light to shine on who really had good cultures and aligned, supportive, you know, like the ones that were really truly living their values versus the ones that were like, just kind of, you know, they weren't walking the talk, you know,
because suddenly a lot of leaders and managers, they realized that they had to manage not just the work of their subordinates, but their lives ultimately. Yeah. Right? And not all of them really adapted very well. So you're a workplace champion, you know, is how I, you know, refer to you.
Yeah.
And a crusader as well, mm-hmm. in of sorts. Right. So over the last few years, how has your approach changed or your focus also to helping organizations with culture?
So yes and no. So our approach is design thinking, which everything we do is about co-creation and deep insights and you know, really thinking about the unspoken needs of the employee, right? And really uncovering those, right? That hasn't changed. You know, that will remain true forever, the approach, because we really believe that if we want to create a workplace that's fit for purpose, that's innovative, that really helps people thrive, you have to do that. Like you have to approach it in that way. And design thinking is the perfect approach for that. So our actual approach has not changed. The conversations we're having with organizations, the types of things we're working on has changed. And, you know, the biggest struggle right now is, what is the role of the workplace? You know, why bring people back? And if we bring people back, how do we do that if we still have people remote? So just all these questions around the new workplace and how to sustain performance while still taking care of people. There's just so many more. You started talking about it. Mm-hmm. Like we're asking a lot more of managers. We're asking a lot more of individuals. We're asking them to do more than just get their tasks done. We're asking them to take care of each other and really understand, you know, the impact of all these things that are happening in people's lives and be empathetic. These are new skills for a lot of people. So you've got this kind of complication around the workplace where, frankly, it was a lot easier pre-pandemic. Like we're all kind of in one place. I mean, remote work wasn't a new thing, but it wasn't as, you know, writ large. So we've got that, and then complicated with the expansion of, you know, skills that not everybody has, and we're leaning a lot. So those are the conversations that are changing, but our approaches stay the same no matter what we do.
Yeah, I particularly appreciate how you refer to addressing the unspoken needs of employees, mm-hmm. right? That ultimately delivers that business bottom line as well to many organizations. The meeting where you and I met, the World Business Leadership Forum, there was a global leadership management guru, Gary Hamel, the author of the book, What Matters Now. And he speaks about that as well, of, you know, addressing unarticulated needs, underappreciated trends, or underutilized competencies of our individuals as well, mm-hmm. right? How are you currently linking culture to innovation in order to inspire higher performance, you know, in the workplace as well?
For me, innovation is the approach. Culture is the topic, right? And then there's all the subtopics underneath it. So So first of all, I love that you use the, or that Gary used words unlock, because the purpose of Flynn is to unlock smiles at work. And the reason why we talk about that is because we know that if we are creating a work environment in which people basically are smiling, we know they're engaged, we know they're in their flow, that they're, you know, it's not about happiness at work. It's about like, I'm in, right? Like right. I'm doing this and I'm psyched about it, right?
And I'm challenged a little bit as well, right?
Challenge, yeah. Cause yeah. You know, we go back to drive, you know, like mastery, autonomy. Perfect. Like he talks about like Dan Pink talks about like human performance. People are motivated by their ability to learn and grow, right? So that is a really big deal, is to be able to learn and grow. So the whole thing about innovation is that, well, not the whole thing, but one of the key elements is at the very beginning, you're getting deep insights around what your user, your customer, your employee, whatever the object of your project is, needs, right? And if you go back to Steve Jobs, he used to be like, you know, people kind of misquote him on this, like that, oh, the customer doesn't know what they need. Like we need to tell them what they need. Right. But his point wasn't that like we're all dumb and he knows all. It yeah. was that sometimes we don't even know what we need. We yes. can't think beyond the thing. So we have to kind mm-hmm. of get in and understand the situation and the challenges and the frictions and the why behind the behaviors and all that stuff. You have to understand that, because if you were just to ask me, I would tell you one thing, but it would be based on like my limited knowledge of my experience. But if you're yeah. from an innovation standpoint, like getting deep into that insight, and then you can say like, oh, these are the things, these are the unmet needs. So we need to create solutions around those things. And so that is in the workplace, what we're always trying to do. We're like, okay. And it evolves, right? Like, so what the unmet needs were 10 years ago, 5 years ago, very different than now. You know, given all these challenges. So that's what's actually fun about my work, is that this continues to evolve. Now, there are some basic just human needs that don't change, right? The need yeah. to be challenged.
And they don't change probably even throughout as we grow from our childhood to our adulthood.
Human needs, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's important to probably to retain that sense of wonder as adults mm-hmm. as well. Even, you know, when I think about, for example, first time I defined behavior for my children, they didn't know what behavior was. It's some abstract concept. It's abstract concept. They were probably 2 or 3, but I started to gamify it. And I told them that, look, you start with 10 points every day, okay, when you wake up. If you do something bad, I reduce points, okay? And if you get 10 points, then you get, let's say, I don't know, $10 in your piggy bank that day. Okay. And then, and I'll explain to you why I reduce the points that will explain that way you'll understand Absolutely. What behavior means, basically. So that's how I taught my children what behavior was.
I mean, it's such a simple concept. First of all, I need to be clear about expectations. And then there's, you know, measurement of that performance. And then there's, you know, consequences of that. Yeah. Like you either get more in the jar or less in the jar. Yeah. And then there's like the conversation of like, how can we do better? Like it's so simple.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I tried my best, Becky, to be consistent over the course of the year so that during their birthday is the only time that they were able to open it. And so they counted like over the period of, let's say, 3-4 years, they compared how much more money they made due to behavior.
Basically, did they learn? Points. Did they get more each year? Did they?
They did. Yeah, luckily they're getting better. Yeah,
because they gamed the system. They actually knew. No, I'm just kidding. It's funny. So I was just going back to that Dan Pink's book Drive. I couldn't remember the third thing, which is hilarious because I've been talking about it the whole time. Says autonomy, mastery, and purpose mm-hmm. are the three things that every human basically drives their motivation. So back to these basic human needs, like that, those three things continue to be proven again and again from when you were a baby to when you die. Like the thing that engages somebody, that motivates somebody to do something, is they feel they have autonomy, they have control over the outcome and their own impact, right? Mastery, that I'm continuing to learn and grow. Like as babies, we don't just sit there and go, nope, not going to learn how to crawl. Nope, not going to learn how to walk, right? Like we we just can't help ourselves. We continue to want to learn and grow. And then purpose, like, why am I doing this thing? I want to be aligned to that why. Even if it's, you know, I'm part of this really small piece of this bigger piece. Like, we need to know why I matter. Why do I even need to be here?
Mattering today, as well.
Right? Yeah. And so aligning to that purpose is really important. And so those are like uncovering like where people don't have those in that innovation process and that, you know, approach, that listening, because people wouldn't necessarily be able to articulate that, be like, I don't know, I just don't feel aligned to my purpose here. Some people can, there are people that get it and, or say they don't feel challenged and say they don't, but there's, you know, there's a little bit of that unlocking. What are the basic needs that aren't getting met? Yeah. Why these people aren't engaging? And then what are some other things that are more contextual factors that are happening that maybe we don't even understand, right? Yeah. So, or they don't even understand how it's impacting them, right?
So based on what you've suggested here, it may be possible that everyone in an organization can be innovative, not just those select few there at the top or the decision makers, or thinking that, we don't need to be innovative. We've come this far. That's not our strategy. Or we're trying to do more with less. There's a lot of inflation out there. Why? We can't be innovative. No, right? Is your answer no? That all of us, if we can, you know, kind of embrace and challenge ourselves, and our leaders can support us, then we can all be innovative.
Well, yeah. So the simple answer is yes, everybody can be innovative. Everybody can be creative. And, you know, it can be just like reinventing or even nudging your own job and team and whatnot. Like, why wouldn't we want that? Why wouldn't we want everybody to be sitting there thinking about how might we, you know, improve XYZ? How might we innovate on ABC? Like, I see no reason to not have that. Like, that just seems like, yeah, it engages me, it engages my team, it helps the company. I mean, it just seems silly to not want everybody in your organization to be thinking that way, right? Sure. But then there's this big I and little I. Whoops, I did the wrong way. Big I and little I, where, you know, there's like, we need to actually like crack a challenge that is a big, hairy challenge, which I would call like a big I innovative with a product or a service or a business. Maybe you're creating a new business, right? Like, or a new line in your business. Those are kind of like big I challenges. And there's different kinds of what we call ambitions around innovation in an organization. And so you could have like, I've got big I challenges, which is like, we need to create a new snack line. We actually need to, and if you're looking at in the employees and in the workplace, you might be like, we need to revamp our entire, you know, performance management process, going back to that. Like, maybe that's where you're innovating. So that's the I. And then there's the little I, which is, you know, some might say that's more like continuous improvement, but I think it's a little bit more than that. Like if you're like little I, it means like it's not going to have this huge impact on the business or the world, but you're still innovating. You're still like looking at something that like, you know, you want to turn around. So there's like ambition, there's like capability. Everybody can learn to be innovative. It's a process and it's got some behaviors associated with it. And if we can align around, like 100%, but it really depends on, you know, what your ambition is. But I do believe that everybody can be creative. Everybody can learn to do these things and it can help in our day-to-day, you know, just getting better and be more engaged.
Yeah. Becky, I know that you and I can probably talk about this for hours and this may call for part two.
There might be a part two.
Yes, to this conversation. But I want to ask how you are stretching yourself and lifting others, because that's really the slogan here at the All Out Coach podcast. Maybe give us a preview of what we can see from you, from Rebecca Fries, founder of Flynn Consulting, everyone.
Thank you. So, I mean, all I want to do is help other people like love their work and help organize. Like, that is all I get up every day and think about that. And so we have some like programs that we run. We just had one last week, these journeys that you were part of that we did with Wobi, but we do them separately. We have them like 3, 4, 5 times a year, sometimes virtually, sometimes in person. And we just came off of one in San Francisco last week. They're called Inspiration Journeys. And just seeing the spark in people's eyes and people light up and get inspired by them, the organizations we were visiting, their cohort, the ideas that were getting exchanged. So for me, like being able to do that, connect the dots for people, see people get inspired and light up and be able to bring that back to their organizations. Like those are the things that we're doing. I mean, we're doing consulting work. We're doing some training on design thinking and everyday creativity that we've got a course going there. So for me, it's just like, where can I continue to pull these levers, especially in times like this where people are, they're really having a hard time. Flynn's one of our values is generosity, and we just always lean into the opportunities to connect dots for people and provide opportunities for them to, you know, learn a new capability, get inspired, and just really get engaged and supported in their work.
Thank you very much, Becky, for spending your time with us. Good luck in all of your endeavors. We'll definitely be following you, and also read her book called The Good Culture.
I have a little promo here. It's right here.
There you go. Oh, okay.
Thank you, Tim, so much. I appreciate you.
This was great. Yep. Appreciate it.